thing will change the fact that he killed my cousin and stole the girl I love from me. Sherzad watched in horror as his hand fell to the hilt of his scimitar, gripping it tight. Though he nearly tripped in his haste to retreat, Tariq's voice did not waver. Make no mistake. The next time I see Khalid ibn al-Rashid, one of us will die. Willing to learn. He had made mistakes. This he knew beyond all doubt. Mistakes in judgment, mistakes in planning, mistakes in understanding. Perhaps it could be said that he was guilty of mistaken pride, foolish conceit even. But Jahandar had not meant for things to transpire as they had. When he'd first called upon the power of the book, he'd thought he could control it. He'd thought he was its master. That had been the first of his many mistakes. For the book had no intention of being controlled, and every intention of forcing its will upon Jahandar al-Khaizuran. Alas, its will remained veiled behind the poetry of an ancient language, sealed shut with a rusted lock and key. A part of Jahandar knew that by all rights the book should be destroyed. Anything capable of the destruction he'd witnessed that fateful night of the storm should not be allowed to exist in the world of man. And yet, Jahandar curled his fingers tightly around the book. Its warmth seeped into his skin, pulsing at the blisters on his hands. The living heat of a beating heart. Perhaps he could control it now, now that he knew what kind of creature it was. Was it the height of foolishness to think such a thing? Further evidence of his misplaced conceit? Perhaps. He could try. Only something small at first. Nothing like the mistakes he'd made on the outskirts of Ray. He knew better now. Now that he'd seen what it was capable of, he'd wade into the book's waters with greater care, with far more consideration than he'd espoused on the hilltop. The night he'd witnessed the book put an entire city to ruin. He shuddered as he recalled the bolts of lightning that had sliced across the sky and struck at the heart of Khorasan's most prized gem. The city where Jahandar had raised his daughters and curated his beloved library. The city where he'd buried his wife after watching her fall to a wasting disease. The city of his most resounding failures. He recalled the many times he'd proven powerless to those around him, powerless to prevent his wife from succumbing to her illness, powerless to keep his post as a vizier following her death, and powerless to prevent his daughter from striding down the palace halls toward certain doom, powerless to effect any change at all. A casual observer to life. Useless. Again he clutched at the book, grateful that both his children had escaped the storm unscathed when he suspected so many others had not. Jahandar cracked open his eyes in the stifling dark of his tent. As it had when they'd arrived the night before, guilt crushed his chest, making it difficult to breathe. His nails dug into the cover of the book as he struggled to take in air, to stanch the flood of remorse welling in his eyes, to drown out the memory of the screams in his ears. It wasn't his fault. He hadn't meant for it to happen. He'd only meant to provide a distraction, rescue his beloved daughter, and perhaps find his true calling as a man of power, a man to be respected, a man to be feared. But Jahandar could fix it. He knew how to fix it. He'd passed along his gifts to his daughter. Irsa had said as much today when she'd mentioned a magic carpet. It had taken all his self-control to lie still when he'd heard the words, to keep silent in the face of such possibility. Sherzad was special, just like Jahandar. And she was strong, even stronger than he was. He had felt it whenever Sherzad's hands had brushed the book, It had welcomed her presence. It had acknowledged her capacity for greatness. His chance for redemption. Once he regained full use of his body, Jahandar would return to his studies. This time, he would master the book, become truly worthy of its power. He would not permit it to control him again. No, never again would he make such mistakes. He would teach his daughter to use her powers. Then, together, they would put right all that had gone wrong. For a mistake was only a mistake if it was left to remain so. And Jahandar was a lifelong scholar. It was the one thing he had always prided himself on being. Willing to learn. The Butterfly and the Brute. Khalid did not like surprises. Even as a child, he had been wary of them. He could not recall a single time when he'd been pleased with a surprise. In his experience, surprises were often a prelude to something much more insidious. Like a slow poison masked by a fine wine, served in a bejeweled cup. No, he hated surprises. Which was why when Khalid walked into Vikram's chamber and found Despina sitting at his bodyguard's bedside, he was most displeased. How had she managed to learn of the Rajput's recovery so soon? Khalid had received word only at dawn, less than an hour ago. Indeed, the handmaiden's eyes and ears were quite vast. They were among the chief reasons she had always made such an excellent spy. No doubt it came from her ability to make friends and gain confidences with the ease of a butterfly, as she'd made friends with those of influence around the palace, as she'd made friends with Sherzad. The handmaiden rose to her feet and bowed, pressing the tips of the fingers of her right hand to her forehead.
Sayidi?
I'm impressed. Khalid remained at the foot of the bed, his features tight. Despina smiled, her eyes sparkling even in the weak light filtering between the window slats. Forgive me for saying so, Sayidi, but you don't look it. A single cough emitted from Vikram's lips, meant to conceal what, in the Hindustani warrior, passed for amusement. Khalid turned to him without preamble. Your shoulder? There had never been a need for formality between them. They'd trained together for years, bled together, fought together. The Rajput had been his bodyguard since the day Khalid had been crowned king, his friend since before that. Vikram did not answer. His black gaze held fast to a nondescript corner above, while Khalid took in the reddened bandages and the foul-smelling poultices wrapped around the copper skin of his left shoulder. When Vikram sat up to reach for the tumbler of water on the low table beside him, he could not suppress a twinge of pain. Despina bent to assist him, ignoring his deepening scowl.
You just missed the fakir, Sayidi, she said as she replaced the tumbler on the low table. He came to say,
That whelp's arrows shattered my breastbone, and the bone in my shoulder, Vikram said in a gruff tone. A tone that promised a fierce reprisal in the near future. Despina blinked, at a loss for words, then recovered in a flash of white teeth.
But the fakir also said...
Vikram silenced her with a glance. Pouting, Despina returned to her stool and looped her arms across her chest. The pitiless side of Khalid felt strangely appeased by this exchange. The sight of the twittering butterfly being silenced by the towering brute. Were Sherazad here, Khalid suspected she would have added greatly to his satisfaction with a sharp quip that would have bettered yet worsened the situation all at once. He strode from the foot of the bed to Vikram's side. Is there anything you need of me? Vikram leaned back against the pillows and eyed him with his usual uncompromising stare. A new arm. At this, Khalid almost smiled. Alas, I need both of mine.
For what? Vikram grunted, affecting a look of disdain.
To fight.
You lie, like the posturing peacock you are.
Khalid's eyebrows rose.
I never lie.
A lie, the Rajput's mustache twitched, his gaze dark.
Never is perhaps the wrong word.
Seldom is better.
Seldom, then. Khalid offered him the hint of a smile. Vikram exhaled, smoothing his right hand across his short beard.
I cannot fight any more, Mira Dost.
It was a difficult admission. His eyes closed for an instant.
Now that is a lie, Khalid said without hesitation. The fakir told me your shoulder would heal in time. It may not return to what...
I cannot feel anything in my left hand.
Truly, Khalid hated surprises. With the fire of a thousand suns, he abhorred them.
His gaze drifted to Vikram's left hand, lying prone atop the linen sheets. It looked the same as always, merciless, inveterate, invulnerable, yet not. He knew words of reassurance were unnecessary. Vikram was not a fool, nor was he in need of coddling. Nevertheless, Khalid could not ignore his inclination to state the obvious.
It is too soon to pass judgment on the matter. He refrained from speaking in a gentle tone, for he knew Vikram would despise it.
Feeling may return to your hand in time.
Even if it does, I will never fight as I once did.
There was no sentiment behind the response, just a simple statement of fact. Despina shifted in her seat, the second sign of discomfort Khalid had seen from the handmaiden since his arrival. Though this puzzled him, Khalid granted Vikram's words their requisite consideration.
Again, it is too soon to pass judgment on the matter.
That whelp used obsidian arrowheads. Vikram's fury cut dark fissures across his forehead and deep valleys down the sides of his face. They shattered the bones beyond repair.
Despite his wish to fan the flames, Khalid tamped down his ire. It would serve no purpose to fuel rage. Instead, his features fell into a mask of false composure, a mask he wore well.
I heard as much. I cannot serve as your bodyguard with only one good arm,
Vikram ground out in pointed fashion.
I disagree.
As I knew you would, he frowned. But it matters not, Mira Dost.
And why is that? Khalid said.
Again, the handmaiden shifted in her seat. Vikram eased farther into his pillows, the edges of his expression smoothing.
Because I will not be less than what I am, and you will not force me to be less.
He did not even bother to challenge Khalid with his unyielding stare.
What is it you need of me, my friend? Khalid repeated his earlier query, though it sounded entirely different now.
The Rajput paused.
I wish to leave the city, to start a life of my own.
Of course, Khalid nodded. Whatever you need.
And to take a wife.
More surprises.
Would it never end?
Is there someone you have in mind? Khalid's expression remained careful, controlled.
Vikram leveled an almost mocking gaze at his king. Then his features shifted slowly to the pouting butterfly at his bedside.
To Khalid's best spy.
Apparently, Khalid's abhorred surprises were only beginning.
Try as he might, Khalid could not hide the look of disbelief etching its way across his face.
And are you amenable to this marriage?
He asked the handmaiden in a voice barely above a whisper.
When her pretty lips started to pucker into an amused moo, and her eyes began to shimmer like wells full of unshared secrets, it took all of Khalid's willpower not to lose his temper and turn from the room in a mindless rage.
Very well, then. Far be it from me to understand the machinations of love.
Khalid shook his head, banishing all evidence of his incredulity.
Is there anything else?
There is one thing more, the Rajput grumbled, almost as an afterthought. Khalid waited, hoping it was not another surprise. Despite my choice of wife, the warrior eyed his future bride, who returned his look with a knowing smile. I do not wish to become the subject of rumors.
I understand, Khalid replied. I will not discuss these matters with anyone. You have my word.
Vikram nodded curtly. We will depart in 2 days. After that, all else is in the hands of the gods.
A sudden pang of loss shot through Khalid. He was not bothered by its presence, merely by its keenness.
I shall miss your company, my friend.
A lie, Vikram coughed, his good shoulder quaking with repressed humor. You shall be the finest swordsman in Rey, finally.
The finest swordsman in a fallen city, Khalid countered, holding back the beginnings of a grin.
Fitting.
He looked away, rubbing a palm along his jaw.
Mera Dost?
It was the first hint of indecision Khalid had heard in Vikram's voice. He glanced back at his friend.
Are you truly not going to bring her back? The Rajput asked.
What's this? Khalid finally grinned, though it was with a heavy heart. After all your early protestations?
Despite all, I find I miss the little troublemaker, and how she made you smile.
As did Khalid, more than he cared to admit to anyone.
She is not safe in Rey, Vikram, Khalid said. I am not for her. And the whelp is?
The lines across the Rajput's forehead returned, along with Khalid's simmering rage.
Perhaps. At least he can make her smile.
And you cannot? Vikram's eyes cut in half, flashed like pieces of flint, like the obsidian in Tariq Imran al-Ziyad's bone-shattering arrowheads. Khalid's blood pooled thick with anger, thick with unjustifiable wrath. After all, he had been the one to let Shazi disappear with Nasir al-Ziyad's son. He had not gone after her, as he'd first wanted to do. He had not ordered Jalal to bring her back, despite the wishes of his heart. It had been Khalid's decision to let her go, because it was best she not suffer alongside him, alongside Rey, anymore. For at what point could he reconcile his faults with his fate? It was no longer possible. Despite all his attempts to avoid his destiny, it had found its way to him, had slashed its way across his city, set fire to all he held dear. And he could not watch Shahrzad burn with him. He would burn alone, again and again, before he would ever watch such a thing.
I cannot make her smile, Khalid said. Not anymore.
The Rajput ran his hand through his beard, lingering in contemplation.
It is too soon to pass judgment on the matter.
Khalid bowed deeply, touching his fingertips to his brow. I wish you happiness, Vikram Singh.
And I you, Mera Dost, my greatest friend.
Not a single drop.
Cut the strings, Shazi. Fly!
The words were whispers in her ears, carried on the air like a secret summoning.
Fly.
Shahrzad sat in the center of her tent, ignoring the commotion outside, sounds of the newest contingent of soldiers arriving in camp, sounds of impending war. Instead, she focused on the dusty ground, her knees bent and her feet crossed at the ankles. Before her lay the ugliest carpet in all of creation, rust-colored, with a border of dark blue and a center medallion of black and white scrollwork, fringed on two sides by yellowed, woe-begone tassels, seared in two corners. A rug with a story of its own, albeit a small one. It was barely large enough to hold two people sitting side by side. Shahrzad canted her head in contemplation, took a measured breath Then she pressed the flat of her hand to the rug's surface. A prickly feeling, like that of losing sensation in a limb, settled around her heart. It warmed through her blood, spreading into her fingertips. Though she knew what to expect, it still took her by surprise when a corner of the carpet curled into her hand. She removed her palm and swallowed. The rug fell flat. "Cut the strings, you goose. Did you swallow your ears just now, along with your nerve?" "I heard you the first 1,000 times, you rat." With a small grin for Shiva's memory, Sherazade reached for an empty tumbler and the pitcher of water on the low table nearby. Catching her tongue between her teeth, she filled the tumbler halfway and placed it within the center medallion of the ugliest carpet in all of creation. "Now for the true test," she muttered. Sherazade returned her palm to the carpet. Just as before, the strange feeling unfurled around her heart before tingling down her arm. The edges of the rug bowed in on themselves. Then the rug took to the air. Soon there was nothing beneath it but empty space. She lifted onto her knees, moving with caution. The tumbler had not stirred from within the medallion. Not a single drop of water had spilt. Exhaling through her nose, Sherazade floated her fingers to the right. The rug followed along at shoulder level, the water's surface as calm as an unruffled lake. Sherazade decided to take the Enterprise a step further. She stood without warning, her hands spiking toward the steepled ceiling of the tent. Sherazade expected the carpet to careen out of control. But, though it lifted in the mere blink of an eye, it refused to be buffeted about on such a graceless tide. Instead, it rippled as though it were under the spell of the lightest of breezes. Trailing her fingertips, it rose above her head, a series of small waves upon an invisible shore, before spiraling back to the ground at her command. She repeated the motions twice, up, down, and back again. Not once did the carpet break contact with her skin. Not once did it lose control. It bore the cup as its weightless passenger, from ceiling to floor like clouds upon the air. The most Sherazade ever saw was the water lull from brim to brim, never spilling, simply swirling about as though it were dancing to a languorous music it alone could hear. Her eyes wide, she let the magic carpet circle back to the earth. In her ears, the voice of her best friend, the voice behind the secret summoning, began to laugh, lyrically, beautifully, teasingly. "Your turn, you goose." Sherazade smiled to herself. Tomorrow night she would test the magic carpet again, without the tumbler. Baba looked better this morning. At least that was what Irsa thought. He didn't seem quite as wan or quite so withered. And he had swallowed his mixture of water and herbs with a bit more relish than he had yesterday. Perhaps he would wake soon. Irsa made a face as she blew the sticky strands of hair off her forehead. She was certain she was starting to resemble one of Ray's innumerable street urchins. Replete with dirt along the collar and sand behind the ears. With a huff, Irsa lifted her chestnut braid and twisted it into a knot at the nape of her neck. Merciful God! Why was her father's tent so much hotter than her own? It felt like a bakery on a summer afternoon. How could Baba stand it? Irsa studied his sallow complexion once more, then finished mopping the sweat from his forehead. "Please wake up, Baba. It's my birthday today. And it would be the best gift of all to hear your voice or see your smile." She pressed a kiss to his brow before collecting her things and striding to the entrance of her father's tent. Lost in thought, Irsa failed to notice the lanky figure standing just outside. "Irsa El-Khaizuran." She stopped short, turned, almost tripped over a sandaled heel, then raised a hand to shield her eyes from the searing rays above. "I waited a long time in the sun for you, so that I could make sure all was well after yesterday's ordeal," Rahim al-Din Walad stated quietly. "But I suppose I'm rather easy to ignore?" Heat rose in her neck. No, I mean, I didn't mean to..." His attempt at laughter sounded like anything but. "I'm only teasing, Cricket." Irsa cleared her throat. "Well, don't." Rahim knew she hated that nickname. He managed a soft laugh. It sounded kind of dry, like parchment being torn in two, but Irsa felt strangely soothed by it. Odd things had always soothed her in such a way. Like the peculiar expression on Rahim's face. "As you can see, I'm quite well." Color sprang into her cheeks. "Did you need something else?" "Do people only talk to you when they need something?" Why did he always ask so many questions? And why did it irritate her so? "No, they only talk to me when they need to, or when they think I need something, as you usually do," she retorted. "But I suppose you're waiting in the hot sun for your health." As soon as the question rolled off her tongue, Irsa wanted to clap her hand over her mouth. What was wrong with her? After all Rahim had done for her recently? Teaching her to ride horses on sweltering afternoons when he could have been with Tariq or the other soldiers, then helping her to rescue Shahrzad just yesterday? Truly, there was no conceivable reason for her to be so awful to him, beyond complete stupidity. Another dry rasp of laughter. If I recall correctly, Shazi was also a bit of a wretch on her 15th birthday. Rahim knew it was her birthday? Did Shazi tell you? Irsa stammered, all too aware of his nearness, her pulse starting to pound in her ears. She felt the same warmth that had brushed across her hand only yesterday, when he'd given her the reins. No. Rahim pressed his lips together as a gust of wind blew a shower of sand through his tightly marcelled curls. "You thought I would forget?" "No, I thought no one would remember." He stared down at her unblinking, his look the same, strangely soothing. The blood rose in Irsa's cheeks again. She swiped the sweaty hair back from her face. And suddenly, remembered that her braid was in a disheveled knot at the back of her neck, that she resembled a ragamuffin of the highest order. Her eyes wide, she unwound her braid and tried to arrange the sticky chaos atop her head. "What are you doing?" Rahim finally blinked, his eyelashes as thick as brush strokes across a canvas. "Trying not to look like a street urchin." "What?" Tiny vertical lines formed along the bridge of his nose. "Why?" "Because I... girls should be beautiful," Irsa shot back, dabbing her forehead with her sleeve. "Not sweaty, stinking disasters."
"Is that a rule?"
"No, it's... you're... troubling." Irsa couldn't help it. He truly was, with his unceasing questions and his unwavering warmth. A light caught within his eyes. "So I've been told." Rahim had never looked at her like that before. "I brought you something," he said after several moments of steady deliberation. "What?" She stepped into his shadow and dropped her hand from her brow. "Why?" He reached into the brown linen of his rida and removed a scroll bound by hemp cord. "I borrowed it from Omar, so you have to return it, but I thought you might like it." He shrugged, then held the weathered bit of parchment out to her. Still taken aback, it took her too long to reach for it. Rahim waited, unperturbed, though she could see another question forming on his lips. She beat him to it. "What is it?" "Omar told me how you thought to put tea herbs and milk in your father's water. This is a scroll on plants and their healing properties. I thought you might like it. I'll bring some parchment and ink for you tomorrow. Perhaps you can transcribe it." He shrugged again. "Or, I can do it for you, though my handwriting leaves a great deal to be desired. Irsa was flabbergasted. Of all the things she'd expected sensible Rahim to do or say, it was not this. He'd brought her a gift? I suppose I could do that. Yes, I mean, I'll transcribe it, not you. You're welcome, he laughed. Again, the sound was brittle in the air yet warm on her skin. When he turned to leave, Irsa felt a sudden urge to ask him to stay. But to what end? As though he could sense her consternation, Rahim looked over his shoulder. Are you coming to the gathering following the war council tonight? Irsa started to nod, then stopped herself. Will Sherzad be allowed to attend?
I cannot see why anyone would object. Not with Tariq at her side. Nothing of import will be discussed around the fire. And everyone is rather curious about her. But, if she decides to come, it won't be easy. All eyes will be upon her. Rahim warned, ever the vigilant friend.
I'll be sure to keep her apprised, and I'll make certain nothing happens to her.
Irsa lifted her chin, meeting his gaze, steady, stalwart. At least she hoped that was how she appeared. She could very well appear mad for all she knew, sweaty-haired and clutching a scroll of curatives to her chest.
I expect nothing less.
Again, Rahim paused in consideration of her.
Tavlodet Mubarak, Irsa al-Khayzuran. May you have 100 birthdays to come.
Thank you, Rahim al-Din Walad. He bowed with a hand to his forehead. When he straightened, he smiled that same almost smile, as though he alone were aware of something important.
What you said earlier? You have nothing to worry about.
What do you mean?
You're better than beautiful.
Rahim took a careful breath.
You're interesting. Never forget that.
As a rose unfurling. He would never say it, not even at knife point. But Jalal may have been right. The Caliph of Khorasan should not disappear for hours on end without word or explanation. But Khalid refused to remain at the palace, day in and day out. There were too many stories there. Ugly stories of blood and wrath and betrayal. The only places where Khalid had ever sought solace had been destroyed by the storm. Or harbored memories he was not ready to relive yet. At least beyond the palace walls, the stories were alive and real. Even if they were raw, even if they tore at his compunctions, he could face them. He could fix them. And after a morning spent dealing with countless scrolls and tedious affairs of state, Khalid needed to see results. Something tangible he had done with his time. Besides fending off an impending war. Alas, it was possible he'd erred today. The sun shone bright on the steps of the city's library. Too bright. Painfully so. As the day wore on, small distortions began to swim across his sight. His headache worsened to a near debilitating degree. It had always been there, but the morning hours spent staring at tiny script on unending reams of parchment, followed by an afternoon of hefting hot granite down uneven steps, had not helped matters at all. Khalid paused a moment to pull his cowl lower and wipe the sweat from his brow. It was not mere happenstance that he had chosen to help repair the city's oldest library. Though there were many others assisting in this undertaking, he had felt drawn to the crumbling stone structure for several days. The place where Sharzad's father had worked before her family fled Ray. A place Shazi had loved. If her affinity for storytelling was any indication. It was clear the building had fallen into disrepair long before the events of the storm only a week ago. The steps leading to its vaulted doorway were cracked and misaligned, the once vivid sandstone darkened to a mottling of grays and browns. The storm had merely brought to fruition the inevitable.
Prodded by its winds, several pillars had collapsed on themselves, falling to ruin under the weight of time and neglect. Now the main entrance to the library was completely barred by their remains. Khalid had already sent his engineers to the site to brace the sagging rafters. Today he was working alongside several careworn laborers, forming a line to haul away the debris. The hood of his Rida kept him safely anonymous, for who would ever suspect the insidious Caliph of Khorasan of hauling stones before the city's library on a sweltering summer's day? Khalid swore under his breath as the sweat on his palms nearly caused him to lose grip on his burden. Indeed, who would ever expect of him such a beneficent act, for it was clear he was quite ill-equipped to perform meaningful labor of any sort. What good were all those endless drills with swords, all those endless lessons in supposed strategy, if he couldn't even transport rocks from a building? When the stone in his hands fell to the ground with a sudden thud, it missed his foot by a hair's breadth. Khalid swore loudly and foully and without a care. "Watch it, boy!" A near-toothless man edged a rock past him, his sun-worn face in a perpetual snarl. "You're liable to lose every last toe that way." Khalid dipped his head in wordless acknowledgement. Then he stooped to collect the stone. His right hand was bleeding again, a gash of brilliant red across his palm. He wiped it on his black tikka sash, hoping to stanch the flow. "You'd better clean that, and wrap it in something before it worsens." The toothless man pushed past him again, moving with uncanny efficiency for someone so slight. "There's usually water in pails at the side of the building." He nudged his chin toward the shadows. Khalid adjusted the front of his rida so he could address the man without impediment. "Thank you." "Don't thank me. I still don't understand why a boy with leather sandals, that fine, is troubling himself with work like this." He regarded Khalid with a critical stare. "Perhaps I have a strange affinity for old books." "Perhaps." But he looked doubtful. "In any case, clean your wound. If it festers and you perish of a fever, your rich father will not be pleased." With a small smile, Khalid bowed, then proceeded to the side of the building to take heed of the man's advice. A rabble of children played amongst pails of water. Several boys fought over a rusted tumbler perched above a questionable fount, littered with ash and debris. One enterprising young girl hovered near a large bucket, its contents fastidiously clean. Not a single twig or a smattering of dust could be seen. She glanced up at Khalid, a smile alighting her features as she took in the fine sword hanging from his hip. "Some water on a hot day, Sahib?" The bit of colorful twine around her wrist slid down her skinny arm as she held up a hollowed-out gourd. Khalid could not help but grin back. "How much for the pail and the gourd?" "For you, Sahib?" Her smile turned mischievous. "Only 2 dinars. Barely able to contain her exulting crow when Khalid handed over the coins, the girl raced into the streets, her day's work considered done. The other children scurried after her, eager to partake in her winnings. Though he'd been soundly fleeced, Khalid thought it money well spent. He crouched by the pail and let the lukewarm water wash across his stiffening palm. As he splashed some onto his face, he allowed himself the luxury of lowering his hood before dipping the gourd beneath the surface and ladling water onto his head. Khalid let it drip down into his eyes. The water stung at first, so he pressed his thumb and forefinger into the bridge of his nose, trying to allay the burn. When he stood, he rolled back his shoulders, basking in this temporary reprieve. "You ungrateful cur." There was not even a moment to process the insult before 2 hands grabbed Khalid by the hood of his cloak and flung him face first against the rough-hewn wall of Ray's oldest library. His foot caught on the pail, sloshing water onto the stone. Though his sight remained blurred, he'd recognize his cousin's voice anywhere. "What the hell are you doing?" Khalid demanded, struggling for breath. Jalal wrapped a fist in Khalid's rida, spinning him around. "I knew you were angry with me, but I never thought you capable of this." His voice was choked by rage. "Truly, I never thought you could be this vile. I suppose I should have known better. I've always put too much stock in family." Khalid blinked hard, seeking a point of sanity in the madness taking shape around him. "Step back before you make an irrevocable mistake, Captain Al-Khoury." "There's no one to save you, Khalid John," Jalal said, with a look to shrivel a cloudless sky. "And it's your own damned fault. No Vikram, no bodyguards. For once, we're going to fight fair, and I'm going to give you the beating you've been due for over a decade, you thankless bastard." Though his words were clipped and precise, Jalal's features were haggard. He still had not managed a proper shave. Weariness pooled in the shadows beneath his eyes. Weariness tinged by fury. "You can try, by means fair or foul," Khalid shot back in a cool tone, despite his unsettled state. "But I insist you reveal your reason for such behavior before I soundly trounce you, as I'd like to know what I'm supposedly guilty of, beyond having the bad luck to call you cousin." At that, Jalal reared back and punched Khalid in the face. Khalid had been born the son of a king, an eighth-generation al-Rashid. As such, it was only the third time in his life anyone had ever struck him with such unmitigated force, with such visceral hatred. First his father, then Sherzad, and now Jalal. Khalid reeled to the ground, his fingers clawing at the dirt. Blood thundered in his brow, excruciating in its force. The chained beast in his head bayed, thrashing about, its claws raking across his eyeballs. Still, Khalid pushed himself up to his knees and launched into Jalal's torso. They landed in the dirt like two angry schoolboys, in a jumble of arms and legs and clumsy scabbards. Jalal lobbed a fist in Khalid's direction, even while struggling to right himself. It glanced off Khalid's jaw. In response, Khalid shoved the side of his cousin's face into the dirt and pressed a knee to Jalal's stomach. He managed to land several unforgiving blows to Jalal's head and chest before Jalal kicked him off, spitting a mouthful of blood and elbowing Khalid without mercy near his brow once, then twice more. A crowd of curious onlookers had begun to gather, surely wondering what had prompted two well-dressed young men to come to such wicked fisticuffs. Khalid clutched his skull, trying to crush away the agony. Needles of light cut the edges of his vision, stabbed his temples. Enraged by his cousin's inexplicably brutal attack, he rolled to standing and reached for his shamshir. Jalal's eyes went wide. Then, without a second thought, he scrambled to his feet and unsheathed his scimitar. "Draw!" A line of crimson dripped down his chin. Khalid's fingers tightened around the hilt, yet he refused to unsheathe his sword. Refused to engage a loved one in a battle of lethal force. "Do it, you coward!" Dirt marred one side of Jalal's face, coating his skin in an eerie dash of glittering dust. Even from where he stood, even in a silence fraught by nerves, Khalid could see a suspicious mist forming over Jalal's eyes. It iced the blood in his veins. "You think I can't beat you?" Jalal strode closer, brandishing his scimitar. "Or is this guilt? Finally a show of guilt for someone besides yourself." Guilt for what? Khalid took in a ragged breath. fighting to maintain his preserve.
What did I do?
The silence stretched inexorably thin. Jalal licked his bleeding lip.
You never did forgive me for sending her away, did you?
His voice was hoarse, scratched, defeated.
For asking that boy to take her with him.
At that, Khalid's hand dropped from his shamshir. Though this was a far cry from explaining his cousin's behavior, at least they were no longer on the cusp of disaster.
I told you there was nothing to forgive, and I meant it.
Then why did you do it? Jalal's sword fell to his side, but his face remained knotted by anger.
What are you talking about?
Any more of these continued vagaries, and it would be a struggle for Khalid to keep his temper. Jalal considered Khalid, clearly searching for signs of artifice.
Despina.
Everything around Khalid stilled. Even the very air around him swirled to a sudden halt.
You sent her away, Jalal whispered, his tone hollow. After I confided in you, you must have known of whom I was speaking. Or my father must have asked you to send her away. And you did it, without question.
He took a slow step forward, then another.
In the end, family is nothing to you. I am nothing to you.
Something flared in Khalid at these words. I never... Jalal's eyes darkened to a muddy haze.
Don't start lying to me, not now.
I'm not. I would never lie to you.
Then it's a coincidence?
He cast Khalid an arch glance.
That mere days after I tell you I want to marry the girl carrying my child, she sent away from the palace without explanation.
I didn't send her away. She asked to leave. The truth in its entirety stood poised on the tip of Khalid's tongue. He wanted to tell his cousin what had happened, but now the circumstances seemed so odd. Now that Khalid knew what had transpired and the true identity of Jalal's love, Despina's hasty marriage to Vikram appeared more than a little suspicious, more than a little convenient, especially for a girl so versed in secrets and lies. Khalid made another quick study of Jalal al-Khori's face, at the poorly hidden pain marring his cousin's features. He would not risk causing Jalal any further pain, not until he had answers, not until he knew what Despina was hiding. Khalid closed the distance between them and placed a tentative hand on Jalal's shoulder.
Especially if I'd known your true feelings, I would never have sent Despina away. Even if Uncle Arif had made such a request, I would not have done so, Jalal.
Why not? Jalal's lips thinned, his eyes going chillingly blank. I sent away the girl you love, so it stands to reason that you would send away the girl I love as punishment. You've always had a bad temper. I just never knew you possessed such a mind for revenge as well.
At that, Khalid felt his temper rise in a hot spike. I do not possess a mind for revenge.
Perhaps he had in the past, but he didn't now. Not anymore.
Not since Shahrazad.
The pain on Jalal's face dissolved in a scoff of disbelief.
It appears you're more like your father than I thought.
I am nothing like my father. Though he fought to keep his temper at bay, Khalid's fingers balled into fists.
I thought you knew that. You've spent most of your life trying to convince me of it.
And you've spent most of yours trying to convince me otherwise.
Congratulations. You finally succeeded.
Jalal clapped with pejorative slowness, the hilt of his scimitar caught between his hands.
What was it you used to say in moments of poetic fancy? We are as a rose unfurling, becoming more clearly ourselves.
He jeered, his anger making him reckless, his anguish making him foolish.
You lost something you love.
I suppose you thought it only fitting that I lose something I love. Unfortunately, in this case, I lost two things. an entire family. His accusation hung in the small space between them, bitter and broken in tone. Though no less harsh for its brokenness, no less effective, Khalid knew Jalal spoke from a place beyond reason. Still, he could not ignore the sharp stab each of his words inflicted upon him, and the responding desire to return his cousin's efforts with some spite of his own. After all, if he was to be accused of monstrous behavior irrespective of proof, should he not rise to the occasion? Khalid cut his eyes, peering down his nose at Jalal. "If she left you, it is not my fault," he said, in that softly condescending manner his cousin so despised. "If you loved her, it was your responsibility to marry her, your responsibility to care for her, your responsibility to tell her you loved her." Laughter rolled from Jalal's lips, the sound as caustic as vinegar. "As you told Shazi?" Four more stabs, each so effective. "She knows how I feel." Despite the cool efficiency of his retort, the air was leached from around Khalid once more, and his fists drew even tighter against his sides. "And now, so do I. Keep watch over your shadow, Khalid John, because for the first time in 18 years, I won't be there to watch it for you." The fire. There was far too much anger in the air, far too much hatred. Such emotions made it difficult to think rationally. Not that actual sense seemed of import to any of the brash fools present. Omar al-Sadiq frowned at the gathering of men in his tent, frowned and remained silent. Their war council was not going well. It was clear there was too much at stake for all involved. Nevertheless, Omar listened as Reza bin Latif shared reports about the boy king of Khorasan, his peculiar disappearances, and the sorry state of his ravaged kingdom. Many of the caliph's royal guards had died the night of the terrible storm. A large portion of his standing army had either perished or fled Ray. Now Khalid ibn al-Rashid was calling on his bannermen to help rebuild and refortify the city. Ray and its ruler were vulnerable. At this revelation, a collective outcry arose from many of the young men present. "Now is the time! We must strike at the heart of Khorasan! Kill the bastard while he is weak! Why are we sitting here idling about? We should attack the city with all haste." Omar's frown deepened. Still he said nothing. He did not so much as move from his cushioned seat in the corner. Even while he witnessed the clamor rise to a feverish pitch, it did not behoove Omar or his people to raise objections now. It was best for him to remain unseen and unconcerned. A casual observer of this crisis, Omar did not yet have all the facts, and he needed to know more about the war that would likely transpire at his border, the war that might put his people at risk. The request Omar had recently made of Reza had not been met with glad tidings. Only moments before, he'd asked Reza to remove his soldiers from the borders of Omar's camp. This was to be the last war council in his tent, his last chance to witness the seeds of this discord. He'd already risked too much by assisting them with the provision of horses and weapons. The Badawi people could not be associated with this uprising. Not yet. Not when Omar had yet to choose which side to take. It was true he felt genuine affection for the young Sayyib Tariq and his uncle Reza bin Latif, but Aisha continued to warn him that neither of these men was to be trusted. One was lovelorn and reckless. The other hid behind secrets and sellswords. And when it came to such things,
his wife was never wrong. The outcry around him grew even more uncontrolled, tearing Omar from his musings. The soldiers stamped their feet and waved their arms in the air, demanding to be heard. Finally, Reza stepped into the center of the tent. At his flank stood two hooded soldiers, muscled and menacing. When a surge of men moved forward, the lackey to Reza's right barreled into their path, a hand on the hilt of his scimitar. The scarab brand on the soldier's forearm flashed into view for an instant. The mark of the fidai. Omar leaned farther back into his cushions and ran his fingers along his beard. Hired assassins. In his camp. Aisha was right. Such a thing could not be tolerated beyond tonight. His family. His people. There was simply too much at risk. My friends! Reza raised both hands in the air, awaiting silence. Though it may seem that now is the best time to attack Ray, it will all be for naught if we fail to secure the border between Khorasan and Parthia first. We must seize control of the lands between the two kingdoms, so that we may have strongholds we can rely on for supplies. I urge you to temper your rage, at least for the time being. A smile coiled up one side of his face. Save it for when it is most needed, for when justice will finally be served on the boy who dares to call himself a king. The cheers began anew, frenzied in their fury. Omar toyed with his mustache and swallowed a sigh. His list of questions for Reza grew with each passing moment. For it had not escaped Omar's notice that Reza seemed disturbingly at ease with warmongering, as well as ever flush with gold. Alas, the identity of Reza's nameless benefactor continued to elude Omar, to deepen his suspicions. The presence of Fidai in Omar's camp only made matters worse, as did the recent attack on the Khalifa of Khorasan, especially since Omar had not been granted the courtesy of meting out justice. Not even on his own land. Omar refused to lose control. The Khalifa and her family were his guests. These were his lands, his people. He wanted Reza's men out of his camp. He wanted to keep those in his charge safe. It pained him greatly that he did not yet know from whom. As he glanced across the way, Omar saw another face sporting a frown to match his own. Though he'd noticed this face for its troubled silence earlier, it rather surprised him now. For it was a face that failed to conceal its confusion and the many questions lurking beneath. The frowning boy stood in a place of esteem on Reza's far right. He did not partake in the angry revelry. He did not say a word, nor did he seem pleased with the news that his enemy's position had weakened. When Omar leaned forward to study the tang in the air between the boy and his uncle, he sensed brewing consternation, a strange uncertainty, perhaps a struggle for power, or a lack of understanding. Omar should speak to Tariq Imran al-Ziyad soon. This had been a poor decision on Sherzad's part. But it was too late now. If she left, the whispers would trail after her. The vitriol would spew in her wake. Her escape would prove their point, would prove she was afraid of them, that their stares and their hatred had taken root. Fear was a currency these soldiers understood well, a currency Sherzad could ill afford at this time, especially if she wanted to learn how best to sneak through the camp tomorrow night and make her way to Musa Zaragoza. So she sat with her feet to the fire, with a multitude of eyes glowing like embers in her direction, like circling wolves awaiting their alpha's command. Sherzad's gaze drifted around the ring of men seated near the crackling flames, drifted past them to note the position of the sentries posted about the camp, their position and their number,
how often they wandered past.